It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin's health department says the mineral fluoride can stop or even reverse tooth decay. But opponents who argue against tap water fluoridation raise concerns about human health. We break down some of these issues, and you can join the conversation. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Bruce Lanphier is a professor of health sciences at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, Canada. Also co-founder of Little Things Matter, that's a non-governmental organization dedicated to protecting children from toxic chemicals. Dr. Lanphier, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Yes, and Dr. Chris Hansen here as well, president of the Wisconsin Dental Association and a retired dentist in Manitowoc. Dr. Hansen, welcome.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for having me on the show today. I feel like a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that.
I go back to the Tom Clark.
You go way back.
I go way back. Yeah, Tom Clark days, chapter day.
And, I should stress retired dentist, right?
I'm retired, yes, but still active.
Well,
active senior.
Let's start with you. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention include fluoridation of community water on its list of the 10 great public health achievements of the 20th century. What are fluoride's contributions to public health? Let's take stock here.
Well, I think it has a long and storied track record of being very, very good at causing remineralization of damaged tooth structure. Also, it has antibacterial properties, which prevent bacterial activity from causing decay in the first place. And I think it has a long history of being very safe, and also it's been very proven to reduce decay rates when used at optimal levels.
But isn't using like fluoride toothpaste enough, or getting a fluoride wash perhaps at the dentist during a cleaning?
That can help, and that contributes to the preventative nature of using fluorides. But we're finding that in some cases where you have segments of our population who have less access to the healthcare system are not benefiting from the benefits of fluoride protection to prevent decay. And in those cases, those are probably the most vulnerable people in our society, the poor, people who are in nursing homes in some cases, or in group homes, and don't have access to the healthcare system as regularly to take advantage of the fluoride applications that can be provided at those levels.
Turning to you, Dr. Lanphier, you have spent years studying exposure to low levels of lead. How has that work informed your approach to studying the risks of fluoride in drinking water?
Well, very much so. We use very much the same approach. We use the same kind of study design. We measured the same kinds of characteristics of the populations, and we use the same kind of interdisciplinary team. Here, we replaced the amount of lead in blood, which is what we use for lead poisoning, with three different measures. And the study we did in Canada, how much fluoride is in mother's urine. That's one way to measure exposure during pregnancy. How much fluoride was in the tap water they drank. And then incorporating fluoride in tap water plus other sources of fluoride in a daily diet like black tea, we had an estimate of fluoride intake.
What did you find there? Can you give some insight?
Yeah, well, our study was very consistent with most of the other studies. And what we found was that as the amount of fluoride in mother's urine increased, we saw decrements in the IQ scores, the intellectual ability of their children. So for example, an increase in the amount of fluoride was in pregnant women was associated with about a 3 to 5 decrement in IQ scores of their children. The second thing we found that was quite striking, and it's only been found in one other study, so it's relatively new, is that as the amount of fluoride in drinking water increased for the pregnant women, for the moms, we saw an increase in the risk of low thyroid.
How can you be sure that fluoride is the culprit?
It's a great question. And the most important thing we can do is replicate the study. And so there are over 19 high quality studies. This is based upon work out of the National Toxicology Program at the National Institute of Health in the United States. And what they found in those high quality studies is a consistent association as the amount of fluoride in drinking water or maternal urine increased, they saw decrements in children's IQ scores. So it's replication and seeing the same pattern, the same results across many different studies is the most important way to see that this is not just spurious or one study.
We're talking about fluoridation of drinking water with Simon Fraser University Professor Dr. Bruce Lanphier there, and Wisconsin Dental Association President Dr. Chris Hansen is here as well. Call in with a question along the way. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Hansen, your organization says nearly 90% of Wisconsin residents have access to fluoridated public water supplies. It also means more than a 500,000 people in our state don't receive the health benefits from fluoride in their tap water. How significant is the lack of fluoridation for these Wisconsin residents?
Well, we feel that if they don't have access to the fluoridated water, they hopefully have access to the healthcare system where they can use a fluoridated means to treat their teeth, both using toothpaste, which have fluoride content in them, and also with a topical application of fluoride varnishes and fluoride gels, and also using sodium diamine fluoride, which is a topical application of a material that has fluoride and also will tend to arrest the development of decay that has already started. So I think that, you know, we hope that we have more coverage for those patients. And the concern we have is that if they don't have access to the healthcare system, they're not going to benefit from that.
So they won't benefit from that. Since 2013, about 20 Wisconsin communities have stopped fluoridating their drinking water. That's according to the Fluoride Action Network. Do you see that as a trend? What is your response?
Well, whenever we are encountering a situation like that, where there is an active campaign to remove fluoride from a community water system, we also will be involved with the public hearing that does occur with that. And we probably present our case as far as the need and also the benefit that public fluoridation has for reducing dental decay. And in many cases, we've had that those community groups and the fluoridation entities will reverse their decision, and also will tend to want to put fluoride back in the water. So again, I think it's an advocacy thing. We have to really make our case before the public, make our case to the public hearings, and to really show the major benefits that occur with having fluoridation in the water, and that really help the overall dental health.
But I wonder, are all fluoride additives created equal? Like, how can people judge the quality and safety of the fluoride additives being used in their water system?
Well, I think that's highly regulated by the EPA. Okay. And they regulate how the water systems are regulated and how much fluoride is put in there. And there's a standard that's set right now through the EPA of 0.7 milligrams per liter, which is like less than one part per million of water in the water system. And we've found it through the studies that we have lots of studies that back up, a lot of robust studies that really indicate that has an incredibly good effect on decreasing decay prevalence in those cities.
Do you think has water fluoridation been thoroughly studied, or is there enough evidence, as Dr. Lanphier has been talking about, to have a need to look further into this mineral and what it is doing?
Okay, and I think that there are tons of studies. This is water fluoridation has been used for over 75 years in this country, and also it has been studied thoroughly. And again, I sent a link there's a document that is available through the American Dental Association called Fluoridation Facts, and you can go on ADA's website and get that document, download it, and you can have all the information, all the studies, and right in front of me, I've got 15 studies from 2011 that indicate the safety and efficacy of fluoride. And they've been studied in meta studies, large group studies, comparison studies. And I think that it is the preponderance of evidence is pretty overwhelming in terms of the benefit of fluoride in terms of improving dental health. I think that science and medicine and dentistry, it's an iterative process. It's ongoing, and we're always looking at research and trying to improve it and making sure that the safety is still a major factor for providing this fluoride for dental health reasons. But I think it's an ongoing process. Lots of study that's out there. There's lots of information. I think it really was very, very helpful to have more information and also more study.
Dr. Lanphier, where do you see the evolution of research in this area of fluoride and more work to be done?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to recognize that in the past, up until about 20 years ago, most of the studies looking at safety were looking at tooth modeling, the discoloration of teeth. It's really only been in the last two decades that we've been looking more carefully at fluoride and its impact on intellectual ability or brain function in children. And I should say that where we really focused most of our research and where we see the impact is in early brain development during pregnancy when the child's brain is developing and in infancy. That's where we see the greatest impact. And so what we focused on is not water fluoridation overall, but the impact on the developing brain. So what the mother drinks is really important, whether that's fluoridated water, whether that's black tea. And so what we've advised is for mothers, and this includes my own daughters, to avoid fluoride during pregnancy. Use fluoride toothpaste for sure, but during that time period, avoid drinking fluoridated water and black tea. As well, make sure you do not mix formula with fluoridated tap water. That should be free of fluoride because the developing infant first has no teeth and therefore gets no erupted teeth and therefore gets no benefit. That's what my dental expert colleagues tell me. And yet they can have modeling, and we do see evidence of IQ decrement. So what we're really focused on is this very short window of exposure where we recommend that women use fluoridated toothpaste if that's their choice. But we feel like we need to make sure that we're protecting them. And from the medical perspective, the way I would think about that is first, do no harm.
Dr. Bruce Lanphier, a health sciences professor at Simon Fraser University. Dr. Chris Hansen is here, president of the Wisconsin Dental Association, as we discuss developments over fluoride in drinking water. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We explore the future of fluoride in tap water. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention highlights research studies that elevate the safety and benefits of fluoridated water, leading to better dental health. And opponents raise potential safety and health concerns. Call in with a question. Share your perspective. 800-642-1234. Dr. Chris Hansen is president of the Wisconsin Dental Association. Dr. Bruce Lanphier is here, professor of health sciences at Simon Fraser University in Canada. Dr. Hansen, in 2015, the CDC lowered its recommended level to 0.7 milligrams of fluoride per liter of water, and that is not a federal mandate. Individual communities can determine whether to fluoridate their water supply, as we talked about. How do you think should fluoridation be regulated?
I think it is regulated now. I think it should be regulated at the state and local levels, depending on the quality of water that they have at the local level. There's a lot of naturally occurring fluoride sources that are there, And I think that it is just important that they regulate it. The EPA gives a the level that is recommended through the United States Public Health Service, but it is up to local boards to really determine that. And I don't think it should be something that should be a one size fits all mandate from the federal government on down, but it is strongly recommended.
Dr. Lanphier, you were called as an expert witness for plaintiffs currently suing the Environmental Protection Agency over the fluoridation of drinking water. What do you hope will come of the court case in San Francisco?
Well, what I hope is that the newer science is brought to bear. And I think one of the things that we need to recognize is that as new science is published, it usually takes 10 or 20 years anyway for that to be incorporated into policy or regulation. So for example, it was in the year 2000, we found evidence that there was no safe level of lead in children's blood. We confirmed that in 2003 and again in 2005. It wasn't really until 2012 that the Centers for Disease Control acknowledged that. And even then, it still took several more years before we really started under the Biden administration to tackle the amount of lead in drinking water. Through because of the lead service lines. And so for me, one of the most important things as new science is evolving is that I want to make sure that the public, and in this case in particular, pregnant moms, families, have the access to this kind of information so they can make their own choice, because I recognize that it's going to take time, not only for the public, but even for dentists and public health officials to incorporate this new evidence.
Is it difficult for the public who are outside the medical community to understand the dynamics with fluoride or what is happening? Because there is a lot of noise, as we would say. There is a lot of competing information.
Absolutely. And it's really challenging, but I think it's one of the most important things. And that's why we created Little Things Matter, is to try to take this science, which can be quite complicated, there's a jargon attached to it, but to make it accessible. And if you look at history, what you'll see time and again is we need good science to make progress in public health, but we also need an informed public. And especially mothers have been at the forefront of asking questions, and when the evidence is clear and convincing, demanding change. And so that's why we created this group, Little Things Matter, to make that kind of information accessible.
We're talking about fluoridation of drinking water. That's Dr. Bruce Lanphier at Simon Fraser University. And Dr. Chris Hansen is here, Wisconsin Dental Association president. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Dr. Hansen, the CDC says drinking fluoridated water reduces tooth decay by roughly 25% in children and adults. Could the same result be achieved by other means?
I think that the achievement of this reduction is a combination of factors of using the fluoride that's available in toothpaste, fluoride that's available professionally by fluoride treatments, and also the low level or effect of having low levels of fluoride in tap water to drink. And I think that these all are additive, and these all are important to be part of the mix in terms of helping to reduce the decay level. And I think that is the goal that we have, is that we want to reduce the level of dental disease. We want to reduce the level of decay, and also try to protect those parts of our society that are at most vulnerable, most at risk. And so I think we feel this is, again, more of a passive means of allowing some of that fluoride to get into those areas where they always don't have access to healthcare, practitioners.
Dr. Lanphier, are you concerned or encouraged that your research is being used by groups that want to end fluoridation of drinking water?
I'm not quite sure whether I'm. I guess the main thing for me is as science evolves, as we begin to understand new benefits and harms, that we acknowledge it, that we take it into account. And at a minimum, the evidence is compelling enough that it's time for our dental community and our public health community to step back and ask questions and be willing to question old beliefs to make sure that In fact, fluoride is not causing harm. And Dr. Hansen mentioned how we need to make sure that we're protecting those without means. And absolutely, that's true. But there's kind of an interesting dilemma here. And that is, to the extent that water fluoride is causing problems with intellectual ability in children or hypothyroidism, which that second part still needs to be tested. Now we're creating a situation where they may not be able to afford water filtration during pregnancy. So it's a big, important question.
Well, thank you both for joining us. That is Dr. Bruce Lanphier, professor of health sciences at Simon Fraser University. Dr. Chris Hansen, president of the Wisconsin Dental Association. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.